Well, good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for coming. It's an honor to be here. This room is full of people that I've read very much, admire. So thank you. I've been invited to perform the role of a punching bag, and I gladly welcome that role in many ways. I'm going to advocate for something. I'm going to speak out of turn. I'm going to advocate for something that the Philadelphia Society has historically been opposed to. But hear me out. This is part tongue-in-cheek, but part serious, and I want to make the case for on what grounds and why it would be important to at least reconsider and perhaps to do some of the things that I would like to advocate for, namely expanding certain powers of government in various ways. Instinctively, I'm against that. I wish it weren't the case that we were in such a situation, but I think we are, and I'm going to try to persuade you of that. I'm also a punching bag because I'm sitting between two people that have completed their PhDs, as Brad pointed out, that I have not yet. The first short point is a qualification to the way that the question is phrased. From the inception of the Republic, the founders thought that we could and should use government for normative ends. And I think that many people in this room know that obscenity, for example, was banned. It was not permissible free speech on the grounds that it would be bad for citizens to indulge in pornography. It would be bad to rile up what were called prurient sentiments. That's a word that we can barely pronounce nowadays, whose meaning has been lost, because those laws have gone away and have been overturned. But these are serious things. What I would like to do is take a step back and point out one thing that I take as a fact, and maybe some of you in this room will disagree with, which is that conservatives, broadly speaking, are losing. It's not really your country anymore. You're dissidents, or you just play in the sandbox that the left allows you to play in. And if you behave and you accept all of their advantages, you accept all of their moral proclamations, they'll attack you less, at least for now. Many of the people in this room may not feel that day to day, though perhaps in your heart you may feel it and not want to admit to it. After all, there is a kind of professionalized DC quality that one must have, which is always being chipper, always seeing the optimistic case. But that professional obligation sometimes may interrupt analysis. Or perhaps others prefer a kind of dose of cope, of copium, in saying things like this, that the truth is on our side and it'll eventually prevail. Okay, well, you know, the Soviet Union existed for 70 years. That's a long time for the truth, so to say, to prevail. What I want to do is take you through a quick argument about, pardon me, the advantages, the institutional power assets that the left has and that the right has. And I want to do a kind of net assessment with you, side by side. I can very clearly tell you what the left has. It's very difficult to say precisely what the right has, but here's what the left has. It largely, not totally, but largely controls the press. And it uses it to discredit you, to humiliate, to destroy you, and make you into an obedient boy or girl. Sometimes our side doesn't even see that the mental horizons within which you operate, where you think you're a free thinker thinking these things and those things, are actually created for you by that propaganda apparatus, which is extremely strong. Think about just one example, immigration. Most of the right does not step outside of the sandbox, and the contours of it have been created by that apparatus. We have no such apparatus. I really don't want to get into universities because this is like the oldest complaint, but I will just say one thing about them, that the right, as taxpayers, funds them. Tens of billions of dollars every year go to them. And everybody knows what they're teaching. I won't go on. And what we say, our copium is, well, maybe we should get Ben Shapiro to campus, give some, you know, intellectual diversity, stir things up a little. Right. They allow that because it's a joke. It's a joke, nothing against him personally, but they know that they have institutional control, total control. Maybe some of you think that there is hope on the K-12 scene. Maybe so. There has been a real rebellion against CRT and transgenderism, but we'll also see how long that lasts. The right likes to be vocal, and then the left goes underground and continues to do the same things, and the right kind of disappears. So that's very much an open question. One thing that always comes up in my kind of day-to-day life is I'm always asked, well, what's the best history textbook for, you know, our schools to teach? The fact that you even have to ask that question, the left has hundreds of them. We're always, and we still, you know, we have one, but like one versus many, which are actually being used. Fortune 500s. I mean, I think that this is pretty obvious now, but it should be pointed out that the right has spent a lot of political and moral capital defending them over the last generation. They took all of those benefits and went left. The right doesn't even know how to control its constituents. The left does. Mobs. Do we have any mobs? Of course not. The left can mobilize mobs quicker than Putin can mobilize his troops. Amazing. At the snap of a hat, at the drop of a hat, 200 American cities are burning, and the American right and everybody else is standing with mouths agape. Like, oh my God, what are we going to do? And the answer is, well, not much. You're going to take it. I won't bore you with big tech. Everybody knows those arguments, but it should be pointed out how the right has spent the last 5 years on big tech. You know, these platforms that, you know, can control the dissemination of information, totally destroy the existence of arguments, maybe influence the outcome of election. The left knew that they had this power, and they were very bold in using it. And the right just debated it for 5 years. A lot of rigorous debate. Now, here are the more interesting things. So again, this is the left side of the ledger of the real power assets that the left owns. What else is on the ledger? Well, the administrative state, which was revealed in this past in the Trump administration, to be far more powerful than I think many on the right, who professionally studied the administrative state, imagined. It can stymie. It can humiliate. It can leak. It can outright disobey presidential declarations. It can undermine a sitting president. It's astonishing. There are a lot of people, by the way, who, you know, 8 years ago you would have said, well, this is a conservative. He voted for Bush twice, you know. And he's pro-life. And that same person, while working in the administrative state, became vehemently anti-Trump and was on board with, quote, saving our democracy from fascism. There's a lot of examples of that. So it ended up being another advantage of the left. Just a few more, and then I'll cease with this, because it's getting a bit depressing. For many years, the right has thought, well, but everybody that serves in the military is a good patriot. Have you guys noticed, you know, what has happened with the paring away of some generals, not promoting them, getting rid of them, and promoting others? To the point where, you know, Mark Milley is saying things like, you know, I mean, white rage is true. I mean, somebody would have been court-martialed for that a generation ago. And it goes on, and it's okay. The paring away, I believe anyways, based on reports of people that are in the military that I know, that the COVID shots were a way to pare away kind of traditional conservative people from serving. So they are making this into an asset of theirs. And then, of course, lastly, and perhaps most importantly, is the intel state. Everybody already knows the argument. I won't get into it. But this is another one of these things that the right has been more or less seal clapping, at least funding, relentlessly, no oversight over it, thinking that, you know, they're patriots. Well, really, I assure you that, I mean, I will be surprised if anybody is actually punished for Russiagate. We kind of already know the story. I don't think anybody's going to be punished. Mark Zuckerberg, a couple of weeks ago, said that the FBI came to Facebook and said that the Hunter Biden laptop, which everybody has admitted is his laptop, is just Russian disinformation. So the state, as we've been studying it, as we've been counting on it to operate, is not the same thing anymore. And it very clearly belongs in this constellation of powers that the left owns. Just to conclude this little section, you know this funny meme that's online, you'll own nothing and you'll be happy? Yeah, it's funny because it's the right that will own nothing. That's where things are pretty clearly headed. I mean, I would challenge people here, not now, maybe in the Q&A, to say, well, what is one genuinely powerful asset that the right owns? I'd be curious to know what exactly that is, because I've racked my brain and I'm not sure. What does the right, in other words, have by way of competition with this constellation of incredible powers? Not even to say creating enough to create a balance of powers. So here's what happens. You get a president who wanted to shake up the system, and now they're talking about indicting him. The ruling regime, which consists of that constellation of powers, won't so simply let you have what you want when you voted in. No matter how much of the truth is on your side, no matter how much better your arguments are, they are playing for the whole thing. They're playing to win, and we're not. They're playing for keeps. Now, maybe you think that I'm making you uncomfortable and that actually, you know, I'm wrong because wokeness has actually peaked. Oh, yeah, it's over. Okay, maybe. Maybe you see that the New York Times appears to be moderating itself a bit. You know, for a month they haven't had any racial hysteria. But there will be something new. They came up with it. They were really good at it. Fascist, Nazi, what? but they used it and it worked. Or the new favorite one, we're saving our democracy. You know, our democracy. They will not give their advantages away. They are playing for keeps. And they won't give them away through begging, pleading, negotiating. If you elect someone who's willing and capable of shaking up the system, he will be treated in these ways. And if you think that, Trump, you know, he talks too much, he does this and that, he's too arrogant, let's go with DeSantis. You think they won't do the same thing to him? Do you guys remember the 25th Amendment? It's insane. He can't be trusted with the nuclear codes. You guys remember they said this in the first, you know, in the lead up to the 2016 election? He's going to destroy the world economy. More of this is to come. There is just no doubt, no matter who your candidate is, they do not want you to win, and they have a lot more powers to prevent that from happening. Okay, so let's get to our point. So while this accumulation of powers has been taking place, let's say over the last, let's say generation, longer, but let's just say a generation, the right has been saying the same thing. And what have they been saying? We're going to cut back government. Okay. We've all heard these words before. We're going to cut the EPA, abolish the IRS. We're going to shutter the Department of Ed. We're going to fire civil servants. We're going to defund this department, that department, that department. You've heard all of this. And what has happened? What has happened as long as we've been saying that? Well, the federal bureaucracy has grown in a certain regard. In a certain way, the number of civil servants has stayed the same since 1960. But that's when you look at the absolute numbers, which are deceptive. In reality, civil servants today are white-collar workers and have policy power. They replace the hundreds of thousands of clerical employees who were needed to do analog paperwork. Number two, there are 9 to 12 million consultants and contractors for the government. We don't even know the number. There's a guy named Paul Light at NYU who tried to calculate it. Smart guy. Can't calculate the number. Our intelligence state, again, that we have not been overseeing properly, that we have been funding relentlessly over and over, year after year. We don't even know how many people work there, obviously, and we don't really know what the funding is. Libertarians were 100% right about the Patriot Act. And this state has grown in confidence and authority. There's no question about that while we've been talking these things. So I think these are the facts. Seeing the impossible struggle to do almost anything to affect its side, as I see it, you have a few options. Number one, keep trying what we've tried. Maybe say keep trying and less half-heartedly. Okay, I think that they're going to run circles around us as they have, so let's put that aside. skip option one. Option two, build it up, build up the federal government, and make better use of it. Or number three, put sticks in the spokes and move on to other things. Okay, let's go to two. Build it up and make better use of it. It hasn't happened despite being a central pillar of the Republican Party, but I hope it happens. But I assume it won't in any kind of serious way, I mean, to pare it back. So what would it mean to build it up? I'm a bit embarrassed because people like Don Devine are in the House, and you know, I've never served in government, and he knows so much more than I do. So these proposals, he's probably going to laugh at me, but maybe some of those that know about as much as I do won't laugh. What are we talking about, building it up? Well, number one is funding, okay? So the left speaks about the whole country, our democracy, and then they just fund their constituents. We also, in our own words, talk about the whole country, but we don't either take away their money or give our constituents money. Okay, that's the kind of parallel. They always fund their side. They always raid the coffers. They're always raiding the coffers. Billions of dollars, billions every year, are spent on their research to fund their class of activists and middle managers, their institutions. Taxpayers fund it. It's astonishing. We tolerate it. We don't even really try to gut it, frankly, with all due respect. But what we could do is say, okay, you keep what you're doing, keep funding your whatever, but we are going to designate, I don't know, I'm making this up, but $100 million to John McHugh at Johns Hopkins. Let him use that money to basically take over that medical school and start up, you know, two or three generations of, you know, doctors that are actually, you know, from the perspective of nature, interested in transgenderism. Build up a cadre. They've built up cadres. We don't stop them, but we don't build up our own. What about a cultural edifice, funding a cultural edifice? I mean, you know, the U.S. government did this all the time. It has an interest in doing such things. It has an interest in promoting a perspective, the conservative perspective, what was now known, I think, as the conservative perspective of why we have a government and what this country is about. It's just funding 1619 type things now. Why isn't it funding an official perspective? Again, billions are spent on, I don't know, what does everybody like talking about? Inner cities. Well, okay, why aren't we spending billions on the rural areas? Why not? Building projects. The right immediately gets allergic to this, but, you know, maybe we should have more dams and we should have more energy independence. And maybe we should be funding basic research, experimental basic research. We did that throughout the Cold War. It worked very well. Of course there was waste. You think there isn't waste now? Of course there is. When Trump was talking about, you know, doing deportations, I think of illegals, he quickly saw that there was just no infrastructure to do such a thing. Well, okay, maybe we need more ICE agents. These are all, whenever the right has an idea, it turns out that the mechanism by which it would be executed isn't controlled by the right. Okay, category two, that was funding. How am I on time?
You've got about another 2 or 3 minutes.
Okay, that's about funding. There's also another category. We talked about obscenity. That's in the category of forcing or preventing. Well, there's another forcing or preventing thing that can be done. You know, corporate tax rates should be adjusted to how many U.S. citizens they employ. You know, they benefit from American laws, benefiting from American financial practices, benefiting from just being here in the talent pool that's provided, and then for them in turn to, you know, hire people from other countries. It's unconscionable that we allowed this to go so far. And certainly the powers of government can be used for that purpose to benefit the country. I'll give you just one quick example. Not only did we do this during the Cold War, but this is also how, when big companies complain, well, the talent pool isn't here. Well, the part of the reason that the talent pool may not be here is because what we've done to, you know, what we're doing to all of our, you know, advanced high schools now, which is, well, these kids, they have too much privilege. They would have been the pipeline to becoming our best scientists, but they got too much privilege. They need a dose of diversity to cut down on the privilege. And so instead of building that up, we end up taking in talent from abroad. And what does that talent do? There was an NBC story the other day where 154 Chinese nationals who worked at Los Alamos are now back in China, working for the Chinese government.
Yep.
It's astonishing. I mean, these are the most amateurish, stupid things that a country can do. And we're just about the only country that does it. China doesn't do this. They do the exact opposite. And so as we whittle away of the kind of remaining talent pool or the channels that would create our own domestic talent, we're simultaneously giving away the kind of last kernels of it to foreign enemies. It's astonishing. The government can stop such things. The last thing I'll add, and then my time will be up, is a thematic focus. We're often told that, you know, the future is female. Okay, well, maybe it should be male. And the federal government can run all sorts of programs, fund apprenticeship programs that would teach people real skills, like sheetrocking, like a variety of other things, so that you don't relentlessly have to rely on illegal immigration to provide for the work for that kind of workforce. That's one thing that's so obvious for any country that is trying to preserve itself, that would teach plumbers to future plumbers to plumb, if that's the right word. In promoting maleness, I think that the DOJ should be investigating pornography companies for human trafficking. That we allow this practice to take place and think, oh, that's okay. That's what freedom looks like. That's not what freedom looks like. That's what the destruction of freedom looks like. The last thing that I'll say very quickly is that, you know, some of these proposals I hope you guys will find reasonable. Some maybe you think are off the wall. Nonetheless, I think that the real game is in the states. That's where the game is. That's where you can do a great deal in red states to actually build them up and make them stronger, to pare back the influences of, you know, certain forms of cancerous leftism. I mean, the state of Florida can take away the $300 million that it gives to the University of Florida, you know. That can be done, and it can be pushed into insolvency. A variety of things like that can be done, including attracting real talent and real assets. I don't want crypto bros to move to Miami. That's not a real asset. But heavy manufacturing is a real asset, and I'd like state treasurers to start buying the corporate bonds as an investment, the corporate bonds of like publicly traded excellent companies to attract them to move, to build up those assets, to have a real workforce, to make those states actually stronger. Thank you very much.
Professor Patterson.